This interview with Ronald Haskins was recorded on March 8th, 2022, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
How is your story so different? Please tell us.
I'm sure I can't really go deep into how I think it's different. I mean, as far as my life, you hear so many stories about being in prison for 26 years. Basically, all my life I've been in prison, so it's a lot of things. I hear from people stories. I make sure I won't go out and do the wrong same thing he did. So I listen to people, you know, like what stuff they've been through. That's one of my things I like to do when I meet good friends and stuff, good guys. Like, man, how you get in here, man? You so good, man. You're patient. You know, it's like, how in the world you get in prison? It was like, man, I got this and this and that. So I make sure I don't fall into the same trap that somebody else just told me about. That was one of my goals. Don't fall into the trap that somebody else just told me about. So if I'm going to be in prison for 20 years, I'm at least learn and try to adapt to what I can do to, you know, better myself and don't fall into the same ways I used to be.
Okay, we're going to open up the questions now to our fellows. Cam, would you like to start us off, please?
Sure. Hey, how you doing, Mr. Haskins? Nice to meet you.
How you doing?
Yeah, so I'm doing good. How's your day going today so far?
It's doing well. It's all right. Can't complain.
Nice. All right. Well, you know, I'll just get straight into the question. So could you just talk about what your experience was going in and what you had to go into for?
My experience going into prison?
Yeah, and like what led you up to going there?
Part of my juvenile life, because basically it's like I felt like I never had a break. So going to prison was like something normal. When I went to prison, it was like, oh, this is something normal. I'm going to be back out. I always had a little gift, like, you know, we're lucky. I'm going to use the word lucky. I wasn't smart enough to, like, far as, like, the law, knowing the law and all that. But I was always, had, you know, like, probably got slapped on the hand, get 5 years here, or a couple of years here, something like that. But this time it gave me a lot, and I wasn't ready for it. But at the same time, going to prison was always, like, it's like a normal thing to me. Like, I'm back in here again. Like, it got way... My grandma, boy, you ain't, I call my grandma every day, and she got to the point like, "Well, you ain't come. I know where you was at. I know where you was at." So it was like normal. So I can't say what really led up to it, but it was like from my juvenile years all the way up, training in school to everyone. Like it was like it was a normal thing, or it got me for something I didn't do, or something like that. It was just a normal piece for me. Like, it wasn't like it was shocking. Oh boy, he got. It was shocking that I got that much time for what, you know, what occurred, but it wasn't shocking that I was locked up. So I was
glad. Go ahead, Cam, got another one?
Yeah, totally understandable. So you said your juvenile life led up to you going to prison. So could you just talk a little bit about your childhood and how your upbringing was?
Oh, yes. My parents, my father wasn't really in my life. We come and go, but I always loved, one thing, I just love my, I only had one sibling, my sister, and I'm the only, and some reason she didn't like that, she didn't like my father, but I love, like, I'm a person, and, but yeah, the mother, that she was like, I ain't say, well, drug addict, but she was a very loving mother, very, and she just couldn't get to a point where they couldn't handle it, because they were my grandmother, and then my grandma gave me, a lot of room to do certain things, like, and then, I liked it to drive, so I used to steal cars. But one time I got locked up 2 times in one night. My grandma came and gave me, don't say nothing, don't do nothing, just get in the car, take me back home. Don't say. That just gave me so much leeway, and probably was the only male in the house. It's me, my sister, a couple other cousins. And I think that spoilness, because I was one of the factors for me being able to, you know, jump out there and society on a bad trip. The stealing cars was like, it wasn't really my thing. I think that was more like on a peer pressure, like type thing, like where everybody was doing. But it is part of my story. And I didn't even go to jail for that type of stuff. But that's what beat me to my juvenile life. Like when fighting and stuff and acting up and like doing stuff. I don't know if y'all from Baltimore, but back in the days, like, a lot of little kids go down to Harbor and stuff, fights and do all that type of stuff. Like on some weekends or something, like, crowds of people, like from Irving Holmes. And I got caught up in that type of atmosphere when it started getting to violence, as far as my juvenile life. But then I got introduced to the weapon, the gun, and that's when I realized the fear. Now, you know, like, I can realize how much weight it carries when somebody know you got a gun on you, talking to them or something like that, how they talk to you. I know a big difference when I got into that type of, like, man, that was a big difference in my life.
Let me ask you a question. Were you more a follower or a leader when you were growing up as a kid?
As in my elementary days, I wouldn't say I was a follower. I was a little gullible. Like, I want to stand out on my own to get that attention. But even if they did accept my attention, I still find myself by myself. I always found myself, like, by myself. But I do things to get their attention. So I want to say that I was a follower, but I did things to get their attention, like big older guys, you know, get their attention, blah, blah, blah. But I always be by myself, always walking alone. Then that's one another thing I did, you know. I wouldn't really say that I was foul.
Okay. Who's next? With the questions. Anybody? Come on, y'all. Tavon.
How you doing, Mr. Haskins? Am I saying your last name correctly, sir? It's Haskins?
Yes.
Yeah, how you doing? How you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, my name is Tavon with Inside Stories. I had a few questions for you. Firstly, I wanted to touch on the absence of your father. You said he was around, but he wasn't around that much. Yeah, can you elaborate on that for us, please?
Well, probably based on they were separated. My mom was separated, so and I was seeing, but he come around once in a blue, but when he do, he's always coming get like me. I mean, he went around like when we had problems and no food on the table and stuff like that. But he around when just cause, but not when around when needed.
And do you think the fact that he wasn't around when needed, I guess, attributed to your life of, you know,
absolutely,
not like crime butcher?
Absolutely. No, absolutely not. I know you probably would think so, but I don't know, as a kid, I don't know how what it is about me, but I had nothing but pure love for me. And everything, and another thing about my father, he was a gentleman. Everything that I'd done, he was shunned. I don't care what he did in life, he always told me the proper way to do it, how to do it, you know, like, as far as how to open the door for a lady when it come, or how to say yes, sir, or no, sir. He always, and I can't take that. But as far as me being gone, I've been blessed with Steph. That's how my nickname is Shine. My mother had a boyfriend named Shine. That's what happened. Everybody thought he was my father. That's how I got it, you know. But they had that mutual respect, you know, like when my father did pop up, it wasn't no big thing. So it wasn't on him. He was more like the angel one. More like when I started doing bad, I'm glad he gone. Like, I don't, you know, like, when he around, he makes sure, like, boy, I heard this, I heard that, we got to talk. And he never, ever put his hand on me. I like how he did that. Did that. And he treated us the same way he treated. He had I got two more sisters. He treated us the same. So because of my downfall when it was most definitely him.
Did you have another question, Tavon?
Yeah, like, you know, how did your sisters feel about your actions and stuff?
Your battery going low. Hold on. Now you're going to the deep question. That's probably why the battery went low on me. let me plug it up. Hey, that's a deep question. Now, my sister, I mean, since we was 10, probably younger than that, she always been my mother. Come, she come to me, we eat today, you know, come on, house, come on, it's getting cold. Like, come on, put your coat on. Always had my back, day one. And I'm an older brother. You would think, she ain't my boy. She's the best. And man, you talking about sister, you know, sister, she my mother. I probably wouldn't be right here if it weren't her.
Did she help you survive while you were in the joint by communicating with you?
The best support in the world, 100% there, whole time, no doubt.
Okay, who's next? Oh, I think he went out.
Can I go next?
Go right ahead. And don't forget what we said, y'all, about keeping your questions short. You should keep your questions to about 10 or 11 words. So think about what you want to say, Carell, and kind of
I got what I wanted to say, and
knock it out the park.
I got it.
Go ahead, man.
How you doing? My name is Carell, and I wanted to ask you, I remember you talked about from being a follower, when you were locked up, was it anything that helped you become, was there anything that helped you go from a follower to a leader and being incarcerated?
Yes, I don't know if you took misunderstood me. I said I wouldn't say follower, but I did things as a kid to impress them type people, like older people. In prison, it's a whole lot different. And I always had to pause, that's mind your business. You mind your business, you stay out a lot of stuff. So I wasn't really, I more like came into a leader because people look like, golly, he doing this and doing that. But most people in prison want peace for real, but they act out, you know. But most people, so they follow people that stay out of trouble, that do all the right things. So I was never a follower in prison, most definitely not that. In prison, I had my own little way. I wouldn't say I was a leader either, but I put my head down, stay focused. And when it comes to me, I deal with it as a man. If it comes to somebody else, I try to stay out of it. My friend, I try to put a little 2 cents in, and I tell you how far I'm going. That's how I cut. And then I just stay focused, not just focus on getting out, more focus on staying out of trouble and staying alive. That was my main focus. Coming home with probably next, me staying alive with one of my first.
Carell, give me another question off of what Mr. Haskins just said. There's something I know what he just said about being focused that makes you want to ask another question. Can you come up with something else that makes you curious from what he just said? You with me, Carell? Okay, who's next? We'll come back to Carell if we have to. Anybody hasn't gotten a chance yet to talk here to Brother Ronald? Who hasn't talked? What about you, Regia? You know you like to ask questions. Come on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just heard the latter part of what you said. Try it again.
I hear you.
Hello?
Yes, I hear you.
Hi. I'm Regia. I'm one of the fellows. I have a question about what are some of the activities you did in prison in order to keep yourself focused? You talked a lot about that.
Yes. Well, most of them, because what I've learned, you know, it's by experience. What I'm telling you is like I got in them problems, and then once the problems over, I realized I'd never do it again. Like, getting into little issues could turn into big issues. One, like, I ain't no gang, so I stay out there business. When I hear about such got said or something says about, I really don't want to hear it. I turn my back, walk away, deal with something else. I don't want nothing to deal with me, so I don't put myself in that business. Whatever that business is, they right or wrong. Just keep it away from me. It's the little thing, like, in prison. It's not like you trying to be rah-rah-rah and all that. It's about, like, respect. You know, sometimes you know you're wrong. You're in the microwave. You took too long. Somebody, you get locked in or something. You say, my bad, man. It took too long. But you go next. Well, you know, something like that. Sometimes you got to sacrifice. You just empathize with somebody that say, man, look, go ahead, man. You just go before me. Little things, like showing respect. You know, and don't judge. That's another thing. Don't judge the person because they might be in this or that thing. I treat them as man, individual. I'm not saying I turn my back on them. I treat them as man. I'm saying I'm going to deal with you for as gang. Like, you know, I might come to me and say, boy, I need a couple of hours or something. Man, I see you. Are you struggling? I'm going to help you. But I'm dealing with you as a man. I don't never give nobody nothing that won't give it back to me. So if you give it back to me, that's good. If not, don't worry about it because I don't give nobody nothing that's going to hurt me. It's just the little things, how you survive in prison. It's just crazy because it's so many things you can just get caught up for. Just a lot of good people, and it's crazy. So many good people in prison. You get to really know, like, man, how in the world are you locked up? Like, it's crazy. In prison, though, you have to really have your antennas up at all times. Even when you think things is really good, it's not.
How did correctional officers treat you?
Oh, now I had a very bad experience with officers because I had authority problems. I learned that through the groups I took. I do, but just fortunately, I just been walking these last two. I got a cane and I got a foot drive. You know, police ran my head through the door while I had handcuffs on, and I've been paralyzed on my whole left side. And I had to go through a lot. And because if they say a stroke or something, they say it was a stroke, then I had to go to court and find out. They had to get a doctor and all that, find out, like, brain, when he ran my head through the door. Mm-hmm. Caused a lot of problems. I had like 3 surgeries after that. And I'm, man, it's just crazy. Not so
was that far. Was that when you first got in or what?
No, this happened like middle of when I got. It's happened in 08. Yeah, 08.
Okay, so you did 26 years. Was that like your worst prison experience? I mean, you did 26. I think I heard you say, right?
Yes. Well, I did. I got locked up 96, so 25. Hey, that's 25.
So was that your worst experience in jail?
The worst experience I had in prison was fought with an officer was that because him running my they had these heavy doors, him running my head through the door when ain't really the thing. The issue was when I was lying on the floor, he stopped me like, you know, like get up, thinking I'm playing. So I'm like, get up. And I'm actually like thinking, like, this man actually put his foot on me. I didn't feel nothing. I don't know. I think I'm me paralyzed. I didn't feel nothing, but the thought that he did it. And then it was so crazy. Another police came down there and said, what you doing, man? It wasn't Hassan that did that. It was another guy. He made a mistake. He had me confused with somebody else. He said, man, what you doing? It wasn't Hassan. So the police felt so bad about it. He took the handcuffs on me and said, come on, let's fight. But you always... I mean, my left side is gone. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I'm actually paying on myself right now. And I couldn't control nothing. I'm just, and then they realized, yeah, something wrong with him. They took me to the hospital and, you know, did all the procedures. But at the same time, just that was so hurtful. Like, man.
Well, you know what? We don't need this for taping, but I'm just curious off the record. Are you following up on it now? We won't use this as part of the tape that we put together. But are you following up legally on that? I just want.
Oh yeah. I'm glad you can't. Yeah, because I can't really. I want to post people. But yes. Yes. That's settled. That's settled. They okay. And the officer fired, but he didn't get fired for me. He got fired for something else, doing something with another inmate, bringing drugs and something like that. But anyway, he got fired.
Mm-hmm. Come on, who's ready to ask another question? It's getting good now.
That's me. Hello, my name is Amber. I have a question. So. It seems like even though your father wasn't all the way present, he instilled a lot of great values in you, right? Because yes. You even had the respect in prison. You still had that respect. Mm-hmm. So for you being where you are now with all the things you've experienced, what would you tell that younger you to keep you from out of jail? What would the advice be to that younger you?
Good question. I would tell myself, really slow down. Cause I always love my family, whole entire family, everybody. Don't give up with nobody. So I'll probably tell myself, slow down, look around. You got everything. My grandmother took care of me, make sure food, clothing, everything. And then I told you my sister was like my mother. Only thing I would tell myself, man, because I did have a lack of, I'm going to say, like in school, I was succeeding, but I always knew that. I said, man, if I know I ain't no dummy. I know this stuff. But it's like, and I couldn't focus. Like, I couldn't focus. Like, I just had to do something other than stay focused on what I did. I would tell myself, man, took advantage of that educator. That's one of the worst. That's one of the best things I would tell myself, man, take advantage of that education. Man, and I didn't do that. That's one of the best things one of the things I would have told myself. And okay. I had no peer pressure. But I was into the opposite. It was just crazy. So I'm going to tell you, this is like a complete change. Because I ain't tell you after like that. I was like, looked at, like, if somebody shots, no, like, I looked at it as, I want to be like a gangster. I don't know if because I like movies, I always want to be fear. Like one time I got locked up for something and one of the police said, oh, that's Sean, he's number three. And the police said, no, he ain't no number three. I said, number three for what? He said, you're number three or the most dangerous one in the city. And I was like, but wow. At the time, my thought process was like, oh, that's like I got, you know, like I passed the grade or something. Oh, yeah. Oh, well. and that's crazy. And I look back at it like, man, I had so many opportunities to slow my butt down. When he told me that should have been like,
okay. Wow, blew your mind. It blew your mind, right?
Yeah.
And like my second question is, because you experience all that roughness, that craziness in prison, how do you sleep? Do you have nightmares?
Yes, I couldn't sleep. I get up right now, I get up like about 6:30, 7 o'clock every morning. I got to do my little push-up, but it's just like, and only problem I
uh-oh.
Yeah, he broke up.
He'll probably hopefully come back. He just froze.
It'll all
really, really toss it because on my foot, like, stop me. And that was kind of the one thing I walked up to him. I said, that was one thing I had a nightmare. I had a real close friend play Pinochle with, like, he's an older guy. He won a life with one of the good guys, a really, really good guy. And I play Pinochle with him, like, every day, stay focused on the right thing, you know, like Pinochle, play chess. I love chess, and we play in Scrabble. And I went on a medical trip, like in Baltimore, you know, a medical trip. You know, they take like 3 or 4 days to come back. So when I came back, I was walking down the tier, and I asked, wait, I'm on my way. He said, what? Well, you ain't know he died. And I was like, what? I had COVID or something. I'm like, what? That's just crazy how people, he was, they supposed to let go, like one of the good ones, let him go. Really good, and it hurting me real bad.
Come on, next one. Who's up with the question? Anybody? Mark, haven't heard from you.
Yeah, I don't have a question yet. I'm listening, trying to find one.
Okay, that's fine. Anybody got a question for Mr. Haskins?
Yeah, I'll pop in while Mark's thinking. So, Mr. Askins, you were talking a little bit about that these little things can really blow up with this respect in prison.
Yes, really.
And I found that a lot of our guests talk about the word respect. Could you sort of explain what that word means?
It's called courtesy, not really respect of who it is. That's why they call it respect when you don't judge nobody. I don't care who it is. It could be a bum. It could be a millionaire, and it don't matter. You treat everybody the same. That's where I had courtesy. That's where, but courtesy coming, like, you on the phone all day long and trying not to hold the phone, nobody, and people over here waiting. People got problems too, you know, and it's called courtesy. Hang, you know, little stuff like that. And if people might think because they got money or got a little power that it might be a little guy, they say, okay, I'm going to get him. Little thing, just little thing, because somebody sitting on the phone not knowing that other people trying to go on the phone too, you know, like, they thinking, but, Well, since I'm the man, I'm supposed to get the phone for an hour or something. I don't know. But it's not just the phone. It could be the microwave. It could be the TV. Somebody could just unconsciously turn the TV, which you're supposed to say, anybody watch, you're supposed to have little stuff like something they should have learned. But, well, something they should have learned or picked up on quick. But some people don't. But there's also another thing. I think the problem in prison is the mental health thing. And a lot of people going through a whole lot, and they know it. They know people like mentally messed up, and they still put them on the tent, you know, like in population. Knowing this man ain't supposed to be in here, he supposed to be here, walk the P card or somewhere. We put him somewhere in some kind of mental place, and that started a lot of problems too. A lot, knowing that they started a lot of conflict and people, you know, okay. But it's a lot. Like I said, a lot of little things, but yes.
So you feel like there's not enough done for mental health in prison?
Yes. I think it's a lot of, a lot of stuff to happen, though, because they know people is mentally gone. Then they got other little kids running around with this drug stuff, and it just, and they like don't really care what they do. They go steal people, going people's cells, stealing that stuff, and it's like, I mean, it's like prison. I always been like fend for yourself, but at the same time, y'all know this called conference. Y'all know this guy did 20 years street. He could go home next month or something. You know what I'm saying? And they still put him in an environment where they know they're going to mess, the good guys mess up. It's like they're the only one, the good guys mess up. Because now it seems like it's better to go for parole having about 4 or 5 tickets, you know, 10 or whatever, you know, like a bad record, then to go up and not having no, you know, like 20 years and don't have no tickets and nothing, thinking you going home. It's like they look at that backwards. And it's like they messing up. They're messing up the thing. And because now you stay out of trouble and do it, go for parole. They might say, nah, it's something like we missing something, or you manipulated your way through this or something like that. No, he think ain't no manipulating. No, I got to think for the next man. If I'm standing by a crazy motherfucker, I'm thinking for him. Sure, I'm going to get out your way. I'm going to move over here. All right, you know, like, you need some help. Or I'm thinking for him to keep him out my way. But parole board don't look at them. It's a lot of things they don't look. They look at your record, but they look at it backwards now. It's like if a person doing the right things, succeeding, they the ones to get turned down. They look. I guess they probably look at it like he manipulated his way through it or something like that. I don't know how he look. I mean, I can't justify for them, but that's crazy. That happened a lot. I mean, a whole lot. A lot of good people get tired. Where you get turned down? I don't know. They want me to do 5 hours. The charges, it could be the charges, I don't know, but it's a lot, that happens a lot.
Okay, let's start winding it down. I think we can take maybe 2 more good questions. I know, maybe 3. I know we need to talk a little bit more about life after incarceration. So would anybody like to take that lead?
So, you just got out recently. What do you see yourself soon? Like in the next year or so? What do you want to do with your life now?
It's a lot of things, but the way things are going right now, it don't look good. I'm not even going to lie to you. See, I can't hold unexpected. I can't hold unexpected. So they didn't have the chance. My social workers and cast, they had no chance to set everything up for me, like as far as my ID, social birth certificate. And all this different stuff, and I move so fast out here. Like I said, I can't sleep. Like, and I'm going through problems already. So my first thing right now is seeing a mental health doctor or something. Cause I can't right now. I don't have an ID. I've been home since December the 10th. I don't have a proper ID. And the jail sent it to me. They say they're gonna send it back because they lost it or something. They're gonna send me no. So I got which I get the birth certificate to go get my ID. And I noticed that all the things I want to do. I need a proper ID, proper job, and all this. I mean, and then they messed my, everything just messed up because they rushed me home, but not saying that I want to come home, but they weren't able to set everything up right for me, like far as my medical care and all that type of stuff. And, you know, the thing I'm going through with the surgery and stuff, it's a lot. And then I got this world, I mean, this city is like moving too fast for me. Like,
it's okay.
It's like it moved too fast for me. Like,
I understand. And it's great that you said that because a lot of men, especially Black men, don't even want to, I guess, come face to face with mental issues. So it's good that you even want to apply pressure to it, get help with it. Because you can help somebody else. You just never know.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're really struggling, Mr. Haskins. I think we really get to the best part of this interview right now. You've said some great things about before jail and during jail, but I want my fellows, like, and I say about the next 10 minutes or so or less, ask some questions off what you just said, because I got a bunch of questions off of what you just said. I'll kind of like lead by example here. You said this city is moving too fast. I think you talked about that before. Is the city moving too fast? Is technology moving too fast? Do you feel like you're spinning?
I'm spinning like, with the technology and the people. And like I said, I was living before prison. I told you that I was like most dangerous. Like, and so when people, I'm speaking to people now, it's like all that exempt and people like, I'm going, the respect level is way, way different. It's like, ain't no, it's different, like, you know, like, oh, you earn this respect, you do this and do that. But on the street, it's like, you ain't nobody if you ain't got nothing, if you don't have nothing. Ain't nobody help me. Every man is for themselves. When you, just so happened, I just happened to be all right. I don't need no help. I just need to put me in the right direction. The right direction. I just want to help. I have 9 grandkids, and I don't have no, no type of income right now. But I'm just here right now. That's all because of ID. I got family, big, big jobs. I just line no ID holding me up. One little thing, and I've been here for since December the 22nd. Now, my medical stuff, I got my family helping that. As far as the birth certificate, it just got here. So my cousin, so I got to wait. Now I got to set up an MVA appointment to get that set up. And then I'm actually driving with no license. So I'm driving scared, stressed out. 25
years over here. Please be careful, because they'll take you right back to the joint.
Yeah, and I don't want that. But I be wanting to reach out to my grandkids. Be sitting here, she having a birthday tomorrow. I can't go over there. I'll be there. She having prom in school. Can you come talk to her? I'll be over there. I want to be there for them. Be there for them. It ain't like all about me having no money, but I could be there like supporting, love money. They know that. So that's why I took a chance, got the car. So I could be able to do them things and go on my appointments. Because that's another thing my family, my sister mad at me about. Boy, why you buy a car? And I said, because I got to go on my medical appointment. I don't want y'all keep driving me here and y'all drive me there. I got to go here. I got to go there. I got to go pick up. I go set something up for the and she was like, boy, he ain't even got no license. You just gonna go right back for something stupid. And well, she was just, I told you, she like, that's my mother. But at the same time, I don't want to be, they don't know that I come home from prison. I'm still confused. I'm like being guarded. Like, I can't go on a medical trip without an officer. I can't go here. that's what I'm saying. Like, so that's why they don't get that part.
Why? So you kind of feel like you're still in jail.
Yeah, they trying to control, like, come on. Oh, and like one of my cousins, she got all my mail. She got to her house, like, she didn't want to tell me the birth certificate. She called me today, said, you got the birth certificate today, so all right, I'm gonna set up an appointment for the MEA. I mean, I'm grown 51 years. I should be doing this myself. I'm used to, like, I'm being spoiled back, but to me now, it's like I'm in prison. It's like I'm still in prison. Like,
hey, you know what? I think we got time for one more question. And I'm hoping it's a question that we all heard, but hold on for a minute. Okay, I just got distracted for a minute. But here's the thing. I heard a question a minute ago that we didn't really follow up on. So I want one fellow to kind of like put everything in synopsis right here. When he said just a second ago, give me one second. Roll board. I lost my train of thought when I got distracted by this phone. Give me one second. Oh, I need somebody to ask and just ask it. Why did you leave jail early? That's the main thing on my mind right now after he said that. Will somebody kind of like pose that question and then we'll wrap this up? Anybody? Don't be afraid.
I think you probably running a little bit late. By any chance, do we cover how he became incarcerated, or are we not going to be able to cover that?
We didn't get specific as to what crime it was, so no, we can touch on that too.
Yeah.
Luke, how you want to do it? We got like about 10 minutes left, I know, before the end of class. Want to get one or two more questions in, Luke? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can wrap it all up into one, and I'll take a shot at it. So, Mr. Haskins, I'm going to go from the beginning to the end, all in one question. So what was it that you got incarcerated for your long, sort of the longer incarceration? And how was it you were able to get out early?
I think I told you all this in one, but I'm telling you, I told you who I was earlier in my year, very dangerous person. So all them charges I was getting, it all caught up with me. So when they came to this one charge where I'm locked up, where I got 40 years for, I can tell you the whole thing that this little kid I had a gun on him, while I'm walking him to the building, because I didn't want, he said he knew my friend, my homeboy, so I didn't want to rob him, but I wanted to make sure he wasn't lying. So I took him to the building, to the building, and this lady keep trying to get his attention. I guess he wanted the drugs he had on. We're trying to get, buy some, whatever. I'm telling her, he go ahead, miss, go ahead. Well, I didn't even quite use them words,
after she got it. I said, can you go ahead? And then she said, I don't remember saying, she said, I said a bitch, but anyway. And she was going to the lobby. And so I said, all right, let me just shoot at it so she didn't know what I'm going. She probably don't know what's going on because I had my gun like through my vest, like a vest. She probably couldn't tell that I, so I said, I'm going to shoot in the air to scare. But I'm in the lobby now, like we were like by the Tiffany building, like in front of, so I couldn't shoot in the air. So I shot sideways. Like, boom, girl, just said, get out of here. She walked away. Anyway, so the day, that day went on, and my homeboy came upstairs. Yeah, that was his stuff. And everybody walked away. Then that morning he called me. I mean, getting you on the show story. That morning he called me. He said, yo, you know they locked me up. For what? They said they come to get you. For what? You know the girl got shot? How'd she get shot? Man, it must have hit so many hit ricochet because the fragment was still in her shoe. So that's, so basically, I'm locked up for some bull crap, but all the stuff I've been doing in life caught up with me. So I get that part, and I accept it, and I understand. And, I ain't something justified. Yeah, I did that to myself. I did it, no matter what. Cause it could have been Dane. Could have hit on the head. Could have been anything. So I ain't saying, like, well, you probably got a couple of years for that. No, but anyway, the friend was in our shoe. And she came to court, and so and took, I didn't even take no deal. They just gave me 20 years for a gun and 20 years for assault, which was, I thought was excessive. And 4 year, I had a 4 year violation for probation. I was on probation. Well, 5 years, but they only gave me four. And I told you, I always kept my head down, stay focused. And I've been going back and forth all my life. I knew how to go. And then I just got, as far as in prison, I just settled down. Went and got my GED. Put me starting a college course. But they had, I did transfer out of jail. I got a couple credits though. What was that, Georgetown? They had some kind of program with the jail. We were doing something like online. And,
man, that's great. That is excellent.
But
Georgetown University, you're saying? Yeah. Wonderful, yeah, but, man. Wonderful.
Yeah, no, they stopped. I mean, they transferred me, so I didn't never finish. And did, no, but I was just happy that I said, man, hold on, I could do more with my life. It changed me. I knew that for a fact. It changed me. That I knew that's me. I could do more with my life. So when I went up Cumberland, I got in like all the groups. I mean, all the groups, all the things that can help, anything that can help me, I got into it. So and then was that 17? May 20 year, 2017? No, 2018. Yeah, I mean 16 year, 2016. May 20 years. So I went up and they, I'm thinking like, well, you're gonna do something like no, till they get no, you ain't got enough time in yet, and you got you know, basically like do your time, you know, your charge and all this and all that. They were looking at my record, which was terrible. So he coming, so told me come back 2020. You have time in. So I went up 2020, and Lane said, man, I don't know who told you that, but you ain't probably coming. You ain't going up for parole, but you, your aspiration date is like 2030, something like that. And so I. No, I had no hope. And then he said, I'm with like, you know, I was in the wheelchair. Then and the man, he said, man, take me. He said, oh, hold up. He right. But just come back next year. D.O. had the whole time because you had a violation. Come back next year. So I went back. I came back next year. And it was the same one because you used to be different ones. It was the same guy, Ronald. And then we had the same name. Ronald, he is Ronald. I forgot his last name. But anyway, he gave it to me. He said, man, you can get, I'm going to let you go home. He said, you ain't a threat to society. And when he said that, yeah, I mean, back in my days when I was young, I took that as like disrespect. He said, you no longer a threat to society. So when he said that, I was like, yeah, I ain't no threat. I'm telling these little kids, well, anyway, they can have them streets. I don't care. I'm just, do the right thing. But anyway, and I started crying. He said, no, it's not. You can't. That's recommendation. You still got with you the commission. I said, okay, I'm just thankful that somebody got my side all these years. I mean, I've been trying to do the right thing, but every time I get turned down for all everything I'd have filed in court, got turned down, everything. Now somebody finally, you know, willing to help me. And
well, I'm hoping that everything works out for you, Ronald. I think You're a great guy, man. We really appreciate you being with us tonight. Yeah. This is not the last. We're going to be back in touch with you because we're going to put all this together. Mm-hmm. I think we talked for a little about 40 minutes or so. We're going to break it down to about 5 minutes altogether. And when we put it together, I'm going to give you a call. All right.
Okay. All right.
I just want to say thank you. I know you got a lot to say, and I wish we had more time. But if anybody else just wants to, you know, thank you, they can go right ahead, and I'll be back in touch with you.
Okay. Thank you.
We thank you for this, man. We really thank you. We're going to put it on our website, and you'll be able to see some of the work that you did tonight. It'll be a few more weeks, but I'll make sure I call you and let you know.
Uh-huh.
Did anybody want to say anything before we get out of here? Just a token of appreciation?
Oh, thanks for sharing class with us. We really appreciate your story.
All right. You're welcome.
Yes, that was a great interview.
Ronald, I hope everything works out for you, man, because I think the one thing I took out of this whole interview more than anything else is how you are struggling now. You know, you did what you had to do. Stayed focused. Now you get out, and it seems like you have a lot more problems once you got out than you had when you were in jail. So I'm just really hoping and praying, man, that everything works out for you. That's my prayer for you. Thank you. Take care of yourself. Yeah.
Me too. Okay, you too.
All right, man. Take it easy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good night.
Good night. Good night, everyone.
All right.
Good night.